Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, Thomas Brooks.
Oh, good evening, sir. Did you
Hello.
catch the latest edition of Oscar Wilde's pamphlet?
Oh, is this because we're back in the Victorian era? Yes, it was after I went and talked to my therapist and received intense electroshock therapy for my minor anxiety.
And your wandering womb.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find it. It's wandering somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, so today's episode, we're gonna get right into it. I'm not gonna like,
I do have one thing to say first about
yep.
the last episode.
Okay.
When we concluded, and I said, just because you have normal human suffering doesn't mean you deserve an identity. And what I meant, that was hyperbolic. What I meant to say was your identity is not going to fix your normal human suffering. So identify as you please.
I mean, I haven't edited that yet, so I can like cut it out.
You could, but I think it was pretty snappy, and I'll stand by it. But
okay.
I did want to clarify.
Yeah. I mean, don't make your suffering your identity.
Yes.
Another good way to view it, because then everything is suffering.
Everything is suffering.
So, speaking of suffering.
And, oh, Lord.
And everything being suffering, we are going to take a trip back to the Victorian era. Though, I mean, to be fair, have we ever truly left like that Victorian mindset in the United States?
Really, I don't think we have in a lot of ways. Like every time I like dip my toes back in like Victorian stuff, I'm like, we haven't changed. We just have like cell phones.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because I'll ask this question later, but like, yeah, because I've got a question about that and about, you know, like, you know, we could argue and the people that we're going to talk about and we are, I'll go right into it. We are going to talk about in this episode, the semen retention and NoFap communities and the kind of kernels of possible truth. Some of the articles that have been written that they kind of cite and support or say support them. And then the vast amount of pseudoscience that gets wrapped up in it. And so, but yeah, like I was reading some stuff today and just kind of, it was iffy, like listening or reading people talk about how like things are so bad today and that like, kind of like the reject modernity, our ancestors were better. And all I could think of is like, have you never heard of the ancient Greeks or the Romans or the Victorians or anyone? Like, there was all sorts of weird stuff going on. Now, like, quantity, I think, is at an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
But to kind of make it seem that, like, our ancestors from 200, 300, 400 years ago, 2,000 years ago, were like better at some of this stuff. I don't know. I find it a little like we've always had some weird issues as a society that, especially that revolve around sex.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading today that Hippocrates, and this was like Greek side, like I never delved into the side of Greek medical belief that hair is hollow.
Oh, you found that! Oh my god, that's the craziest thing.
And that because for Hippocrates and the ancient Greeks, semen is created in the brain, and so hair holds all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And women have longer hair because they aren't as hairy on the rest of their bodies.
So the idea is that like because hair is hollow, it creates a vacuum, so when you're ejaculated into, it can like suck up and hold the semen so one can become pregnant.
Okay.
And so hair is seen as a sexual organ in that context. And that idea is older than Hippocrates, which is where we get hair coverings as religious garb.
Makes so much sense. Like it's all clicking
Yeah.
together. It's like, oh no. Yeah, okay.
Yep. Nope.
Yeah.
Hair is a genital, so
And I mean, like we've had this for as long as we've had like any sort of like, you know, odd religious belief system. Like, you know, like they don't, you're not supposed to spill seed. You're not supposed to, like, just from like an evolutionary standpoint, we want to continue the species. And so you create a lot of weird norms or I guess weird from a modern context, but you create a lot of norms and rules about what you can and cannot do with semen. We're gonna say, I'm gonna say semen way too much. It's gonna be very
Semen.
uncomfortable. This, I, you know, I have students on occasion who are like, I've listened to the podcast and like, I do enjoy it. And then they're gonna get to this episode and be like, I don't ever want to look at you in the face, you know, in the eyes again. I'm like, fair, fair. It's only
And
getting
see,
worse from here.
on the opposite end, if my students listen to this, they'll go, "Wow, this is tame. He only talked about semen." That PR.
Keeping it restrained for the podcast.
I know. No,
That's
they all wanted to know about the furry fiestas because I'm back now, and we did the sex talk at Furry Fiesta, and I have worse things have come out of my mouth in the last 7 days than
Ooh.
semen.
I mean, fair, but
Fair.
so we were having a very brief conversation and kind of debating on which of these two communities I guess we find better. I mean,
I mean, they're both like, I don't know. To go back to our argument about human suffering for a second, like, why would you deny yourself like a tiny little burst of pleasure every day in order to get through your day? That's kind of my first thought. I'm like, hey, you're not like, that sucks, man. Like, I'm sorry.
I came across a couple of groups. I was like delving through some of the subreddits, and I mentioned briefly to you beforehand that like I came across arguments about pseudoscience and nofap and how it's a problem, like going back over a decade. And so these are conversations the community's been having, and I think that's probably why you start to see like splinters. Like they've kind of rebranded themselves today, and I think that's where like there's this like kernel of potential positivity. It's not really about restricting it altogether. It's not about meaningful release. It's about that kind of obsession that they had with pornography and finding ways to channel, going, I'm thinking back to like our Crowley meme talk, channel that energy into more positive things. So actual relationships, not maladaptive engagement. And there were people who were like, look, they're like, you know, I every 3 or 5, you know, 3 to 5 days, they're like, but I'm, it's not an everyday thing, but it's an every couple of day thing, because they're like, at that point, like everyone becomes attractive and I don't want to make dumb decisions. And I was like, okay, sure.
Sure.
And then you have other people on the subreddits who are like, I just hit a year. And I'm
Oof.
like, all right. And
Buddy.
then I move into like the semen retention message boards, and they're on a whole nother level of like
Yeah.
religious spirituality of like, don't even have sex with your wives. Orgasms are bad. You have to reabsorb it into your body to gain power. And
Right.
there are scientific articles to support that this happens.
I think I would definitely put nofap into pseudoscience category easy. Semen retention, on the other hand, because it is so religious and spiritual, they play this like rhetorical game of like, science supports us. Look at all this evidence. But like, there is no evidence and they aren't supported. Which makes me feel like it goes into our like other category of like astrology believers. Is kind of my thinking with this.
I mean, I'll use the words from the NoFap community. They call it a cult. including there's another community that is like kind of religious traditionalist. They seem to be very conservative. It's like clean living. And it's more about like, look, like just like we don't have to watch porn. We can do our own thing. Mm-hmm. But like they were having an argument about like it being a cult and it being very like cult-like because they're very, you have to do this. You can't engage in this any, you know, despite the actual sciences, which I guess we'll talk about at some point.
Right. Yeah. No, and I think that was because like when we were brainstorming this, I was kind of thinking like these would be like complementary communities to talk about, but really it's very conflicting.
Yeah, it seems that at one point they were. At one point, the semen retention community was kind of a part of the NoFap community because like they mm-hmm. both engaged in that restriction, but it seems to have split to be more about supporting people who are having an issue like doing it too much for mm-hmm. maladaptive reasons or with like where it's becoming a problem in their lives to this almost like spiritual enlightenment mm-hmm. through the retention, like the actual like the way this is reabsorption of it into the body,
right?
Which doesn't happen.
But yeah, that doesn't happen. But I mean, I don't know. I think my issue with NoFap, and this is kind of like, I pull this information from pretty much the lead scholar on this right now, Nicole Prowse. She's been researching the NoFap community for like a long time now, and she gets like major cyberbullying for it.
Sounds about
but
right.
It's her and then also Josh Grubbs, who does the problematic pornography, self-diagnosed porn addiction research as well. And my core issue with NoFap is that they do center around pornography addiction. Mm-hmm. And it is like an advocacy group with money to push for the APA to include pornography addiction in the next edition of the DSM.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely see that when I'm looking at it. And it is a big push of getting more research and stuff to try to support. There's a lot of talk about like neurotransmitters and like quote unquote neuroscience research that kind of supports the addiction, which I mean, I'm always conflicted with this because there are like psychological addictions.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that become psychologically addicting. And that if you're able to like this idea that you can like break or reset, I think is a little oversimplified in the way that they talk about it.
Reboot.
Yeah. That you can like break, but you could kind of condition yourself. And part of that conditioning is how you get into that like maladaptive habit of engaging. But is that like mm-hmm. addiction in the same right. way? And like, I know a lot of clinical psychologists are very iffy on wanting to like talk about it in terms of addiction because like there's a difference between booting up your computer and watching pornography and like doing heroin,
right?
That there's there may be some similar processes going on in your brain with like a boost of dopamine and the other like aspects of the reward circuit and whatnot, but there's like there's this reticence to want to compare the two.
And part of that reticence is Grubbs's research. So he finds that moral incongruency is the leading predictor of self-diagnosed porn addiction or religious therapists. And so the idea is that this moral incongruency is like it's pretty much like cognitive dissonance. Like you hold that watching porn is bad, that it's bad for you, that like God's watching you jerk off while you watch Pornhub, like, oh my God, I'm going to hell, I'm a terrible person, while also continuing to watch porn. And rather than absolve that through changing your belief or changing your behavior, it then gets displaced onto, oh, I'm a porn addict. It's a compulsion. I can't help it. And so that's kind of like my issue with the porn addiction stuff is that, like, I think it's a cope. Like, I don't think it's a, they're not taking, it's not a taking responsibility for your cognitive dissonance situation. And so that is kind of been a consistent finding over the past like 4 or 5 years through Grubbs's work. And he's also found that there is no relationship to the amount of porn that's viewed and the self-diagnosing of a porn addiction. So it's not like with like gambling addiction, right? Like I spent my entire kid's like trust fund or whatever at the casino, and like that's when you know, or I go to the casino like X number of times a week, and like you're like, okay, this group over here definitely addicted. This group over here, they're having a good time, they're in the orange. But with porn, it's all over the place. Like you could watch it once a week and then freak out because of this moral incongruency and then give yourself a porn addiction.
Right. It's different than what would probably really constitute it as someone who is, you know, eschewing work to do
right.
It and not holding a viable relationship because they just keep engaging in porn or they're hiding, you know, I mean, like, or like in the same way that someone's like hiding it and and then instead of saying like, no, I should have been more open with my partner, like, but we don't talk about it because there's this like religious stigma about it. And so, but it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
I was addicted.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the like the politician that gets caught every now and then. They're like, I have an addiction. I have a sex addiction.
Yeah. Sex addiction is also not in the DSM. So yeah. That's kind of my like, that's the like alarm flags I get with NoFap that I don't get from semen retention is this appeal to porn addiction. Like it's a very desperate appeal. In the reboot NoFap research from Prowse, like she finds that, let's see, where did this one come out? This came out last year, actually. It's reboot NoFap participants' erectile concerns predicted by anxiety and not mediated or moderated by porn viewership. And so that's kind of like, what are y'all doing, guys? Like, y'all have an issue that you're like displacing onto this, like, cultural depth, this folk devil of pornography that's not a thing. And then her more recent work that came out this year, that's a pre-registered study, found that, let's see, she found a couple things in this one. The first one is that for identifying as a pornography addict in the lower religiosity sample, so NoFap is explicitly a secular group, that it was narcissism, not religiosity, that was predicting self-diagnosis.
Ooh.
Which makes me think, like, I'm a porn addict is a way to, like, displace this thing you're uncomfortable with about yourself and, like, release control or responsibility of it.
Well, yeah, because even if it's outside of the religious context, we're still, again, in a very Victorian society.
Yeah.
We are still very sexually repressed. I mean, today I learned that a principal was just ousted in Florida because some parents complained that their kids saw the Statue of David in a video. And so
what?
The school board like went against the school principal and like ousted someone, either the principal or someone at the school, because some parents got upset that their kids saw the pornographic Statue of David.
There's a whole nother episode that we should do about how the sex positive movement failed and that we are actually reverting now, but that's like,
yeah, we'll save that
time,
when
but
we move
no,
away
yeah.
from pseudoscience. That's
yeah,
our next,
so,
that's but, our next season. We'll do sex.
Sex. There we go. Sex in the summer.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, she found narcissism was the predictor of self-diagnoses. She also found that participants reported that NoFap forms contained posts that were misogynistic, bullying, anti-gay, anti-Semitic, instructing followers to harm or kill themselves, or threats to hurt somebody else. And more engagement in these online forums was associated with worse symptoms of erectile dysfunction, depression, anxiety, and more sex negativity. And I was like, ooh, like, she's sharp. That's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely came across, like, when I started reading into at least what they're kind of scientific backing was. Because if you kind of look at it today, this is only a couple of days ago, someone kind of talking about, like, what they are, what the NoFap community actually is, not maybe trying to kind of support what they are and kind of get away from the pseudoscience labels. Yeah, so they say, like, there's zero evidence that occasional masturbation without porn is harmful, but there is a growing amount of peer-reviewed research that porn is. They focus more on, like, the challenge of taking a month off or 3 months off. But it's about working to reduce their addiction. It's very, like, addiction based, but they do have that secular side. But one of the things that I found was, like, the idea of one of the things that they keep citing as is a big research bump is that it boosts testosterone. That
I did see that a couple times.
I went and read about the study it came from.
Oh, nice.
So the idea, and I think that's partially why we see it kind of co-opted as well by, like, that kind of alpha male grind set or sigma male grind set by avoiding it, because it's going to boost your testosterone and it's going to give you more chest hair and make you, like, stronger and more energetic. And then, like, things just start going further and further depending on, like, who's trying to sell you what, because then it becomes like, but then you can make money with it. Like, because if you're getting that out of your life, you could focus on the important things, like becoming a millionaire and living forever.
Cheers.
Yeah. But the study that it was based on, and this goes back to, so yeah, there've been a lot of claims, but there was this study that looked at the actual evidence. So this was here's the PubMed study. So this was Exton, Kruger, Birch, Hike, Knapp, Shedlowski, and Hartman. This is November 2001. Endocrine response to masturbation-induced orgasm in healthy men following a 3-week sexual abstinence. And so in this study, they basically measured testosterone levels, let people do their business, measured testosterone levels again, waited 3 weeks, measured testosterone levels with, like, 3 weeks of sexual abstinence, and then measured it again. And they found that, like, on the pretest after 3 weeks, so, like, the second pretest, testosterone levels were higher. And, you know, so they were like, hey, you know, we found something here, in their sample size of 23 people.
Right on.
Yeah, so the second study reported a 45% increase in testosterone levels after 7 days as well, but it was a temporary peak that returned to the same levels as before, and that even with continued abstinence, stayed that way. But with that, I will read you the claimed benefits of NoFap.
Oof.
Which is, I will note here that there are many movements similar to NoFap, such as semen retention, and they all appear to be predominantly aimed and practiced by straight men, with only smaller pockets of women and LGBTQIA plus people participating. It's also been taken up by a lot of far-right misogynist groups like the Proud Boys, happily engage in NoFap. Claimed benefits. 3 levels. Sexual, physical, and mental. And this is from Daniel Kelly, who apparently does some NoFap stuff. That's the author. Sexual benefits. Enhanced sexual enjoyment. Stronger orgasms. improved appreciation of healthy sexual relationships. We're starting to get into like social perception as opposed to maybe like increased sex drive, although some have reported the opposite. And improved sexual self-regulation.
I mean, like, some of this is so, like, eh, and some of it's just, like, outright. Like, I, the one that I'll give is it's likely that you probably have more intense orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that one's probably solid.
You want to move to physical or mental next?
Give me the physics.
Higher energy levels. Because, like, apparently, like, that's why you're tired all the time. I'm like, it's because I don't sleep.
I just continuously jerk off and I don't get enough sleep and I burn all my calories with my, like...
That's what happens. muscle growth.
Okay.
Better sleep. See? There we go. Improved focus and concentration.
Should that be in mental?
Not according to this chart, but that's because they don't understand the difference between physical and mental traits. Better physical performance and stamina. Improved or cured erectile dysfunction, which you've just mentioned is false.
It makes it worse.
Improved sperm quality. Quality.
Quality.
And that's, if you're,
fast
and that's
swimmers.
And that's if you're not a member of the semen retention group, because in that group, you're reabsorbing it into your body. and increased testosterone, which, again, debatable. Highly debatable.
Well, I'm terribly confused now because, like, if you're not fapping, like, you're getting rid of, like, a very important, like, arm exercise. So, like, I'm not sure how you're supposed to have muscle growth if you're, like, reducing the amount of exercise that you have. So,
because you go to the gym and you lift weights in that time period that you would normally be masturbating. You have all this free time. Yeah, you could do all this, like, extra stuff. Like,
right. Yeah. Like, hey, it's 11 p.m. I guess we're going to Planet Fitness, y'all. Right? Get the boys together.
And then this is very like if you're within that community and, you know, you're trying to deal with the cognitive dissonance, we get into some of the mental stuff. Increased happiness. Sure.
You're still suffering. Sorry.
Boosted confidence.
I don't know if that has any bearings, but okay.
But, you know, I view that in the realm of what we talked about last week with, like, because if you're identifying as, like, an alpha male,
mm-hmm.
and you're a part of that community, like, it comes with the perception that it's going to do it. And so
right.
If you're a high identifier, it might boost your confidence as almost like a placebo.
Also, if you do succeed at NoFap, that is quite the accomplishment. Like, I won't diminish, like, the dude who doesn't jerk off for a year. Like, that's quite the accomplishment. So, like... I don't know. Maybe that's well-earned confidence and self-control.
I mean, that's the next one. Increased motivation and willpower. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'll give him that. I'll definitely give, like, him that.
Sisyphus made it up the mountain.
Lower levels of stress and anxiety.
Nope. It gets worse.
Heightened spirituality.
I thought this was secular.
I love your face. Yeah. Well,
maybe.
Self-acceptance. Not according to the research that you just shared with me.
No.
An improved attitude and appreciation towards the opposite sex. Which, again, not based on the comments.
Not based on, no.
Yeah.
No, it's pretty rough out there.
And it does, I think a lot of this is tied to some of that view of testosterone. Like, testosterone in men does seem to have some support in some NIH articles and studies that like looks at, like, improvement of depression, happiness and motivation. But, like, that's probably just in men. because it's our primary sex hormone. It's like, you know, it's a primary hormone. And like we also see, like, you see probably greater fluctuations with age. So like as you go through what is it, andropause, we start to see some, you know, issues with like mood swings and all the stuff that we would expect to see with menopause. But it's low testosterone instead of low estrogen. And testosterone is associated with muscle growth and physical performance. And so I think a lot of this is just like they found everything that was ever associated with testosterone. And they were like, well, if you're retaining and increasing your testosterone, all this stuff should come from it.
Right.
But
right.
like, you still have to go out and work out to increase your muscle growth.
Right. Like you can jerk off and go to Planet Fitness. Maybe not at the same time, but in succession.
I did find, and this is from only 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. I was looking up the NOFAP response to the pseudoscience allegations. And there's this guy who joined it 2 years ago with the greatest intentions and only just started at the time of the post, like really trying anything, but was talking about like, hey, what about these pseudoscience claims, like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I have to read you, and then I'm gonna leave the floor to you, but I have to read you this anecdote, because it kind of hits the point of like, of course we're not pseudoscience, but also it did all of this stuff for my husband. One of the benefits of getting older is that you come to understand that there will always be someone who refutes someone else. When I was growing up, the majority of scientific community said we were going to freeze over the next 20 years. Cigarettes were considered healthy and a great prescription for nerves. I'm like, yeah, it's because they were paying doctors to say that. The atom could not be split, irrefutable. So many different things that I can't even recall now. I, for one, don't care what the quote-unquote experts say. They say ED is not caused by PMO, which I'm thinking is porn.
PMO. Porn.
It's like porn pornographic masturbatory orgasm. And they followed up with, and yet my husband had ED for 5 freaking solid years until we discovered that porn was an addiction. Took 4 to 6 months, and he has not had ED since in a year and a half. This is where
pornography, masturbation, and orgasm.
Oh, okay.
And orgasm.
All right, so like at that point, it's like, all right, maybe they had a talk, like maybe there were some issues, maybe like instead of getting intimate with his wife, he was finishing up, or I'm not, or husband, I don't want to assume who this person is. Their profile picture is a dog, so
they're a furry.
So yeah, this is where it starts to like again, like I see like maybe where like it starts to see like, all right, like, yeah, your stuff about like, I don't believe the experts, but like, okay, like had issues with ED, we're dealing with the fact that he was maybe watching too much porn and like couldn't get intimate with partner, probably because like finishing to porn and not having anything left to get intimate with your partner with. This is where it starts to get into that other realm of like, look at all these wonderful things testosterone retention can do. His fingernails were deformed. I have since known, have been since I've known him since he was 18. So bad that he went to multiple doctors to try to fix them. He was so embarrassed and would hide his hands. Now, a year and a half later, they're almost perfect. Sure, your fingernail problems. Not sure how a placebo would do that.
Only Jesus can do that.
Yeah, he has more hair. He's growing all his hair back. A lot more hair on his chest. His voice is also so much deeper that my parents made a comment and they have no idea. He no longer comes home and has to take a nap. His penis is bigger, softer to touch, and has a better color.
Oh.
His face and skin and eyes look so much better. I pulled out a picture of him when he was really deep in his addiction, and he just looked sick. I told my sister at the time he just looked awful, but I didn't know why, especially since that the time in his life he was working out regularly and watching what he ate. So he was already working out and watching what he was eating, but it was a porn addiction that was causing all of this. So believe what you want. I have the evidence and the massive changes in my husband. The only thing that has changed recently in his life is that he quit PMO. He goes to counseling. Plus, OMG, he's so much more handsome. At 52, I'd say he's the best looking he's ever been. He looks 10 years younger.
Okay, so
this is
I need to ask this person a question.
Yep.
Did they close down the NASCAR track in your town at the same time you stopped watching porn? Are you no longer breathing lead? Let's figure that one out first.
That's interesting, because again, correlation does not mean causation.
Yeah, like I'm just what, and this was a year and a half ago, so we were in COVID times.
2020, yeah, when they posted this. But it would have been a year and a half before then, so it would have started in like 2018.
2018?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like January 2019. Yeah.
I don't know. We need a computer person to track this user down and figure out if they live in a town that just closed down NASCAR track.
Oh man. Yeah, I can't
But that's my first thought. I was like, this sounds like lead poisoning. This doesn't sound like masturbation.
Yeah, I don't know what it was the last thing that they posted, but they have like hundreds of posts, or you know, several posts before then. Yeah, it's very interesting. That like, again, it's like the claims. It's like starting to notice things when there's this significant event. Person's obviously getting counseling. That's great. Like, that's probably something that needs to happen. But also, like, who are they seeing for counseling?
Right.
If they just learned about sex addiction. Or porn addiction in this case. So, yeah,
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that definitely gives me, like, they may call the semen retention people a cult for being like hyper spiritual and religious about it.
Mm-hmm.
But like that sort of stuff gives me cult red flag.
Yeah.
And I will, before we move on to semen retention, I did look up the official nofap.com.
Yeah, that's where I read that from.
Oh, did you? Yes. Did you look at their what is this page? Their weekly support calls?
Oh, weekly group meetings. No, I was on their forums.
So if you would like a drop-in support call it's a large podcast style call, get support, ask questions, or just listen Thursdays 10 a.m. through 8 p.m. Eastern time, access to one session per week. It is $20 a month. If you would like an accountability group up to 35 people, it's $40 a month. And if you would like a small accountability group with just 12 people, it's $120 a month. And it's facilitated by Matt.
Yeah,
Matt has worked as our community manager since 2016. Matt has led hundreds of peer support meetings and helped facilitate in-person workshops to educate people about porn addiction and recovery strategies. And that's all we know about Matt. We don't even have a last name.
Yeah, NoFap is a secular recovery website, according to them. It's not religious.
Ooh, fine print. This monthly membership is automatically billed until canceled. While we do not provide refunds for the service, you may cancel your membership at any time. Support calls and accountability groups available. Availability varies. We have to cap the number of people. If you're looking to join, we recommend signing up after the blah blah blah. But you may be waitlisted.
I will say I do agree with their post that says this is not mental health care or therapy. They are peer facilitators. It does say that they strongly recommend you see a therapist, but
individual results may vary.
But they do say that the website it links to, or the article it links to, is how to find a porn literate therapist.
Oh, yikes.
Because at the time, the DSM does not include porn addiction, and this is leaving many clinical professionals in the dark about the phenomenon, and many compulsive porn users struggling onward alone and uninformed. So basically they're saying, like, hey, if this person follows the DSM-5, they may not be literate in porn addiction. It may be a generational thing, according to this article.
By signing up and attending accountability groups, you agree to waive all claims against NOFAP, LLC, our team members, or our call facilitators for any advice that you receive or any actions that you may take as a result of attending accountability groups.
I will say, they do say, like, therapy is rarely a bad decision, especially if you have the insurance and financial means to do it. But they also kind of mention, like, there's a growing industry of coaching that is marketed to help with porn addiction. It can't hurt to connect with a coach, especially one with experience in that. It's a lot of, like, back and forth, but yeah,
I don't know. I think for NOFAP and the porn thing, it's not an addiction. Like, that's where everything is trending right now. It's pretty well supported. It's a cognitive dissonance thing, but also, like, if you think that it's not right for you to be watching the amount of porn that you're watching, then people have a right to change that. Mm-hmm. And so I just would not recommend NOFAP as your route to change.
A good therapist.
Yeah. Even a coach would be fine. Like, I don't know if you need a therapist to unpack, like, your issues around porn. Like, if you're like, hey, I'd like to only watch one pornographic video this week instead of 37, the coach can be like, that sounds like a great goal. What ways can we, you know, create some baby steps to make that happen for you?
Right. To make it healthy.
I'm like, cool. Yeah. But, like, stay away from this group. I don't really have a lot of time left, but
a lot of the same stuff also applies to the same addiction community.
They're just a little bit more spiritual, and they have, like, they have some really interesting techniques. So they're not NOFAP.
Yeah.
And I learned this information from sexualalpha.com.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's real legit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What happens if you stop ejaculating and practice semen retention, just like with any lifestyle change? Semen retention will cause your body to react to the sudden decrease in sweat release. Here's what medical science has to say about the physical effects of semen retention in the body. It's important to note that modern medicine does not recognize semen retention as a legitimate medical practice. Your body will always produce sperm whether you ejaculate or not. Semen is stored in bodily structures called seminal vesicles. When these vesicles are full, they will release semen during sleep in the form of nocturnal emissions. So, way to go, Sexual Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Why do men engage in this? It has spiritual benefits, increased fertility. I learned about dry orgasms, provide some men with unique pleasure and sense of empowerment. Among other personal factors, some men report that it will increase their motivation, personal drive, and desire. So here's how you can practice semen retention. There are many methods. The first one is edging. Edging is when a person brings themselves to the brink of orgasm without actually finishing. Once the person reaches the edge, quote unquote, they stop having sex or reduce stimulation to avoid climax. This reminded me of the Goon Cave article.
Mm-hmm.
There's also retrograde ejaculation, which is pressing on the perineum or the taint, the area between the scrotum and the anus, to prevent semen from releasing, is called a retrograde ejaculation. This practice often causes semen to mix with urine in the bladder, creating cloudy looking urine after orgasm. And that's from the National Library of Medicine and the Roe Health Guide.
Does the existence of retrograde orgasm also imply the existence of anterograde orgasm? Like, if we're using amnesia language.
Well, I was just about to say, my orgasm is in retrograde with Mercury this season.
Yeah, like, keep with the spiritual talk instead of the scientific talk.
There's the squeeze technique. This technique involves edging by placing the thumb and forefinger on the front and back sides of the penis, right where the head joins the staff, and gently squeezing. Upon reaching the edge, the individual waits 30 seconds and then repeats the process several times over. Okay. Abstinence. Pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
And then pelvic floor exercises. So getting your Kegels in. The pelvic floor is a muscle group that supports organs such as the sphincter, bowel, and urethra. While normally involuntary, specific exercises can allow an individual to strengthen these muscles and use them voluntarily. Which is true. So that's cool. Let's see. It's very Taoist. So
yeah, there's a lot of like Taoism, Buddhism, like tied into their spiritual practices.
Very like stronger personal energy and spirituality, confidence, creativity, motivation, which is kind of why I put this into the astrology camp.
Mm-hmm.
Because like the NoFap people are like, your lack of testosterone through masturbation is like keeping you from doing these things. And this one's like, hey man, just like retain your semen and become enlightened. And when you're enlightened, you
back
have
into
these
your brain.
Things. Yeah. Like I'm like, okay, like sure. Jupiter determined my personality at work and like the amount of semen that I like suck up into my hair follicles will help me get enlightened. Sure. So they have all this fun stuff. Risks, blue balls. Retrograde ejaculation can cause infertility in men, apparently. That's from the Mayo Clinic. Semen retention traps sperm, leading to ejaculation problems such as premature ejaculation. And according to the DSM-5, infrequent or absent ejaculation for 6 months or longer can cause serious mental distress if the individual desires to ejaculate but is unable to.
Yeah.
So,
possibly also associated with prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is good to clear the pipes.
Yeah.
Let's see. Myths about semen retention. Does semen retention boost the law of attraction? Does semen retention increase your happiness?
I mean, it supposedly clears your skin, makes you look younger. You grow more chest hair.
Let's see.
Or I guess that's
Sexual Alpha says, despite high praise from some online forums, semen retention is not a cure-all solution to mental or medical problems and will not drastically improve your health or happiness. Exercise, proper diet, and healthy sex life are far more likely to generate happiness by improving your physical and emotional well-being. Does semen retention increase testosterone? During an abstinence period, men do experience elevated levels of testosterone. There are positive aspects to increased testosterone, such as enhanced sexual drive and motivation. This is the 2001 article.
Yep.
So, same thing. So, Sexual Alpha actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah,
I do have the Semen Retention Miracle, The Secret to Health, Wealth, and Longevity by a Joseph Peterson.
I was looking at there are a lot of articles on medium.com written by people with very bot sounding names but very like American looking pictures. they just very like the name fit like the spiritual guru. But like it was very much like that's a hipster white guy, like I don't know what to say about it.
Because
I was like, oh, like maybe like they're gonna talk about the pseudoscience with this, and it's all like we're gonna tell you why it's real. And then it was like 40 meals equates to like 40 drops of blood and like, you know, like 40, like that equate. It's something that like the whatever the Buddhist monk or whatever that kind of like coined some of this stuff. It was like meals like lead to like blood, and then like blood leads to this, and then this leads to like a drop of semen, and then like that's why it's like the condensed essence of life, and that's mm-hmm. why you must retain it. And I was like, okay, take his word on it, and moved on to a different article.
Scare quote Joseph Peterson says that it will increase your productivity, motivation, your income potential, focus, self-confidence, energy, libido, strengthen your immune system, sharpen your memory, make you more of a risk taker, helps you sleep, relieves depression, deepens your voice, gives you stronger hair, and improves mm-hmm. your self-control.
I mean, to be fair, it probably does make you more of a risk taker.
Yeah, you think so?
I mean, some of the people on the NoFap forum were like, look, if I go too long, I start to get clouded judgment. And I was like, okay. And they're like, yep, gotta make sure, you know, it doesn't go beyond a certain amount of days, or I might like, you know, make risky sexual decisions.
So I just went down and there are 238 ratings. Most of them are 5 stars, but the 1 star ones are very interesting. We have everything you already know, how to scam people, write a book and make everything so obvious it's silly. Testosterone is good for the brain, it boosts motivation. Shamans and athletes say they benefit from this. This guy is getting paid by taking advantage of men who are looking for in-depth information. This is anecdotal stories with info you already know. Huh.
Right on, 1 star reviewer.
2 star reviewer says it's an incomplete book, thinking I could just write my own. I learned more about the actual methods from Taoism and through my own work getting clients through addictions. I should just write my own book. That would be better than this one.
I mean, like, if you can't visualize that or like realize that when you first see the book, but like, again, like it's preying on, especially when you start to move into the realm of like, this can increase your wealth potential. Because this
right.
is these groups are highly associated with the quote unquote alpha and sigma male grind set.
Mm-hmm.
That's in order to be like one of these true alpha men, you have to engage in this, because it not only makes you more of an alpha because it's boosting that testosterone, so it's all tied into that, but also that it helps to like, yeah, you're gonna make more money, like it's gonna get you more motivated, it's gonna free you up on that time. You know, like all that time you're going to say in your day.
How long are they masturbating?
Yeah. Ugh. I was trying to find an applicable ask psychology question, but I really couldn't find one. But before I get to that, I want to read this because I found it. This is from a Salon article on the NoFap and semen retention movement. But they were talking about masturbation in general. And it's just, masturbation is quite normal. Many animals do it. And this is kind of what I was like, oh, like we're, you know, of course we're not the only species, including primates, bats, walruses, dolphins, because of course dolphins, rodents, yeah, and even some birds. However, just because there is no scientific evidence that porn will cause brain damage or ruin your sex life, it's never a bad thing to reevaluate your relationship with a behavior or habit. And I can agree with that. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself, is this really serving me? Do I enjoy this? Is it harming my relationships or social responsibilities? And then it says, if it's not causing you harm, don't feel ashamed. But if they are, the shame still won't help. Like, mm-hmm. go and seek help. No one is worthless or a pervert for enjoying sexual content or self-pleasure, but self-control is key. And I really like that message in there. That
I agree.
Like making yourself feel bad for it isn't going to help.
Yes. And I will say too, like, I'll dog on these two groups, but like for individual dudes who like are like pretty distressed about this and like don't like are more than likely aren't in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
My ethos is still the same. Like, it's a shitty, terrible situation. And also our conversations about algorithms and, you know, social media and the social mediaification of pornography. Like that is some next level stuff compared to like the freakouts that people were having in the 80s about like VHSs. So like it is like a totally different playing field, and yeah, we aren't equipped to deal with it. So like I'm not going to like shut down someone who feels like they are probably addicted, but I will say that, like, you know, evaluate your values on it first and then reflect on your behavior to see if it actually is the problem.
Yeah. I mean, I do kind of agree, because like a lot of them, like some of them are coming from a place where they acknowledge that like it is just so much easier than it's ever been to get porn. And like, I can see that as like, that's a valid thing. Now, is it corrupting society? Is it corrupting the individual? It might depend on you and your relationship with it. But not, you know, I mean, like we've always engaged with some level, like, I mean, as human beings, like we have really old examples of pornography. We have really old examples of engaging with this sort of what we would call, you know, with some of these groups are called depraved behavior.
Yeah. I don't know. Both of these groups feel like reinvented Victorian health and wellness schemes looking to scoop up and squeeze money and time out of men who are suffering.
So I was going to pose the question on my own and not an Ask Psychology, but I'll get to our Ask Psychology question. I was going to pose the question because someone did make a comment in one of these forums about how we are more depraved and more far gone than our ancestors or from older generations. And I was like, no, we're not. No, we're not. Like,
no, we're
the
not.
Victorians were terrible. and they were doing all sorts of stuff. They were just repressing it. And like, you know, making themselves kind of feel bad for it, but like typically not if you're a man. All sorts of weird stuff. I was going to ask you the question. We've kind of touched on this, but I thought it would be too easy. So I found a new one. It's 18 minutes old. So the easy one was, is human suffering capped?
Capped?
Like, is there a cap to human suffering?
No.
Right.
No.
That's the answer.
The answer is it will always get, like, no, they lied to you.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better.
It's an experience. it's a spectrum that keeps going.
It gets worse and then you die.
Wait, we're really ending on some high notes. And this one's not going to be any better. So this is the question 18 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago at this point. What treatments or diagnoses do you think that we'll look back on in 50 years from now and shudder? Like, what are we doing now? And they said, like, or laugh. Like, remember how there were class A drugs and cough syrup? What do you think the next generation will look back on with new knowledge and be horrified at what we did or didn't do?
What are we doing right now?
I mean, like, we are moving away from a lot of, like, some of the really, like, so, like, states are starting to ban conversion therapy, but, like, most modern medicine and modern psychology has, like, thrown that to the wayside years ago.
Right, but I think the idea, like, I don't know, I feel like we're probably doing some stuff that right now, after our reforms from the 20th century, that will be considered barbarous in like 50 years.
Maybe some like some particular forms of like behavior therapy. So like, because I mean, we don't really use like, what is it, like rapid
aversion,
like desensitization?
Therapy?
Yeah, like rapid or like I'm thinking of like the kind of desensitization therapy. I forget the specific name for it, but it's basically where they like throw you in a room with what you're afraid of, and they're like, deal with it. And it has a really potential for really negative outcomes.
Yeah, there's that. I'm thinking, like, I don't know, because it's
We
going to
don't
be a
even use
totally
that.
different value standard. Because, like, for us looking back, we're looking at like physical and psychological harm to the individual as our value standard for the morality of those treatments. And so there's going to be a different one. And I wonder if it's going to be like, maybe like social perception or like social capital. Like diagnoses or treatments that decrease social capital. And that might be the main value. And so I'm wondering if things like, or maybe like we'll hyper reject apps and social networks and algorithms soon. And so things like the app therapy or teletherapy is going to go out of vogue. And like it'll be terribly shocking that at one point in time that like, you just uploaded your client's documents online.
Yeah, like going back, almost like regressing back to like a simpler, like the face to face. That made me think of I had the thought and I lost it.
Or like you let your computer camera like video you while you did therapy and confess things about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder too if like we would go back to like the realm of, because like one of the conversations that this always been had, or it's been had for the last couple of DSMs, is just the nature of the diagnosis and the potential harm of the diagnosis. I think that's maybe where you were getting at with like the social capital, like it reduces your social capital to be diagnosed. That we're gonna
I
look
mean,
back.
possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that we're gonna look back and go like, whoa, we don't, you guys like had like we look back on like hysteria now. We're gonna look back on like major depressive disorder and go, no. You're diagnosed with symptoms, not a disorder.
Right,
And so like to kind of take the Rogerian therapy to the next level, like it's
like get away from the categorical like diagnoses.
because it's
Could be
like
that.
the big criticism. It's still one of the big criticisms of the DSM is this worry that by getting that diagnosis, it may actually hinder more than help because there's stigma that comes with it, and then also like we know with self-diagnosis identity that you end up identifying with it to the point where like maybe it makes you feel better because you're not alone. That's the upside, but the downside could be that if it becomes a core part of your identity, you may start exacerbating symptoms because it's expected of someone with X disorder.
I
I
wonder
don't.
if personality disorders as just like a class of diagnoses too will be out of vogue.
That it's just people.
That's just people, and that like there's no like they'll like let go of personality disorders.
don't know. I mean, interestingly, that there is the possibility we're going to be around. I'm gonna like knock on wood. Like, I can be around in 50 years. I'm gonna be old, but
Giving kids Adderall.
like
That could be a backlash.
maybe some like general medications, because we're now learning that even like I mean, there's a lot of research that looks at like even just pushing school back an hour. Like helps because that sleep is so important for brain development. We're looking at like teenagers who smoke marijuana or drink and like the effects on brain development that that has. Like, what about Adderall? Like any drug, like giving kids antidepressants. We
Yeah,
might look.
because that's kind of the history of Adderall is that it's changes hands, like who gets prescribed it. So it was like a decongestant, and then it was for World War II pilots, and then it was for housewives, and then it was for kids with ADHD. And so when that hand change happens again, I wonder if we'll look back and go, oh, why were we giving that to kids?
Some of the over medication, I think we could possibly see a backlash to it, though I could also see a societal shift where like we're bowing to big pharmaceutical companies and we're doing more medication, more medication, less therapy. And if that becomes the norm, society's going to look back on it and go like, talking to people? How is that supposed to help with your depression? Nah, you gotta take the Moderna pill or the Bayer pill. Like, you get,
take your depression vaccine.
Yeah.
Get your booster.
Man, if only, right? Like, that'd be great. I, to, though, to be fair, like, that'd be pretty awesome.
That would be pretty awesome.
So, no, but that's a really good question.
We have brains.
Yeah. I don't know. You get philosophical with that.
The brain, take my most, cod glass.
Yeah, intelligent, you know, amazing organ in the body because the brain says so. So yeah. Yeah, maybe a kernel of truth in, like, people wanting to, like, come to terms with themselves and self-betterment, but they're kind of, like, going about it in a weird way. All tied to Victorian era religious repression.
Very Seventh-day Adventist.
And hey, maybe in 50 years they'll look back and go, can you believe some people were trying to get porn addiction into the DSM? Or maybe we'll be wrong and we'll look back and go, like, can you believe we fought against that? Turns out porn addiction should have been in the DSM all along.
Right.
So, interesting. It is only going to get spicier from here. We're going to move into the realm of chiropractic medicine next. We're going to talk about homeopathic cure-alls, aromatherapy, turpentine, carnivore diet. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's going to get worse and worse. But then we're going to come back around and we're going to end on a high note. We got some hauntings coming in there.
Oh, future. Huzzah.
So,
carbon monoxide poisoning.
magnetic interference with the brain. So,
cool.
All right. And yeah, so we'll leave everyone with that. Enjoy life. Don't
feel bad about masturbating.
Don't beat yourself up about it.
Beat off, don't beat up.
That's one of our new shirt ideas. And on that note, goodbye, everybody.